From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, the audio podcast. I'm Ben Bolin.
And I'm Matt Frederick.
And Matt, today we are going to... Actually, you know what? I'll do a little segue if you want.
Yeah.
A segue. All right. So you're familiar with Florida.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. The state.
Okay, so yes. I know what you're talking about now.
I'm just messing with you, man. Yeah. So in Florida, when I was a wee young tyke, it's in the northern Florida swamps, the Panhandle swamps, and I was on a camping trip, and I swear, man, I saw a really freakish looking animal. It was right around twilight, yeah.
Okay.
And I was camped out. We could see through the trees, through the canopy, something moving under the water. And
whoa.
Yeah. And so I assume something like, oh wow, that's so cool. Maybe it's an alligator.
Yeah.
You know. And later, come to find out, as we were heading back home, one of the locals in the area told me that that was not any normal alligator, but it was actually a giant lizard of an unknown variety. Yeah. It was, in other words, a cryptid.
A cryptid.
A cryptid, which brings us to cryptozoology. Now, let me go ahead and just say that I think the old guy who was telling us that was just messing with us since we were kids.
Sure.
I don't think it was an extraordinary animal, but were I a cryptozoologist, I would probably go back and investigate that, because cryptozoology is the very, very controversial study of animals that are rumored but not proven to exist.
This is true, and that's what we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm. And so what's an example of a cryptid?
Well, one of the best cryptids that comes to mind, probably the most well-known, it has a lot of different names, but it's the Sasquatch / Yeti / Bigfoot.
/ Abominable Snowman / yeah. Yes, that's right. And we covered this actually at a live show.
We did.
For some kids. The quest for Bigfoot has gone on for such a long time, and the archetype of this hairy, half-man, half-animal thing dates back into antiquity, into prehistory.
Yeah, the wild man.
The wild man of Bora Bora and all that stuff. Yeah, the thing is that Bigfoot, as we refer to it on our Facebook page, either doesn't exist or is the world's reigning hide-and-seek champion.
Yes.
Because no one yet has found uncontested, inarguable proof of Bigfoot. Now, there are a lot of conjectures about why this hasn't happened, chief of which is that maybe Bigfoot doesn't exist. Maybe it's just a series of misidentifications, you know, people who have never seen a bear before see a bear.
Exactly.
Standing on 2 feet.
Maybe.
Or maybe this creature has intelligence such that it's able to evade people, which is very, very, I'm just going to say, improbable.
Or my favorite idea.
Yeah.
That it's a multidimensional extraterrestrial.
I was wondering when you were going to mention that. Oh, that's the documentary In Search of Bigfoot, right?
Yeah.
Where one of the hunters proposes that idea. So when we talk about cryptozoology, the most popular cryptids, which are these hidden animals, quote unquote, are going to be creatures like Bigfoot.
Yeah. Or Loch Ness Monster.
Sure. Or Chupacabra.
Mokolemembe.
Ah, that's a deep cut, Matt.
I hope I said that right.
Yeah, you did. Mokolemembe.
Okay.
Or we're both mispronouncing it.
Yeah.
But so cryptozoology at heart comes from the Greek. It just means hidden animals. Literally the study of hidden animals. Now, we said that cryptozoology is controversial, but let's talk about where it comes from, because people can't quite agree on where the name comes from, right?
Yeah.
They attribute it often to a zoologist named, here we go, Bernard Heuvelmans. who also attributes it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a Scottish person named Ivan T. Sanderson. But, you know, regardless of where the term derives from, the point is that this quest for hidden animals is often not treated well or regarded kindly by
a fringe, mm-hmm. an area of study that isn't necessarily legitimate in the eyes of a lot of scientists.
Yeah, especially zoologists.
Yeah, mostly zoologists.
And so while we're doing this podcast, what we'll do is we'll talk a little bit about different types of cryptids that are alleged to exist, and we'll talk about why cryptozoology has often been called a pseudoscience. And then, you know what, man? I think we should close with some surprising stories of cryptozoology.
Awesome. Let's do that. Before we get into all of that, can I just tell a quick little story as well?
Do you have a cryptozoology story?
It's not necessarily a cryptozoology story. It's just kind of the origin of why I'm interested in these kind of things. And I think a lot of people might actually relate to it.
I'm in.
Cool. So as a young lad in middle school, I used to watch X-Files with my dad. It was my favorite show ever, and it would freak me out. And I loved it. It really piqued my interest. One of the episodes that really got me into cryptozoology, or at least looking at Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot and those kind of things,
mm-hmm.
was one called The Host. Now, this is season 2, episode 2, and you might remember it. It's a creepy white monster that's half human, half flukeworm, and it lived in the sewers, and it would suck on you and inject you with flukeworms. Mm-hmm. It was one of the grossest things and creepiest things I've ever seen. I would go to the bathroom and imagine it inside the toilet. I would walk by the sewers in my neighborhood and just run past them, or I would not take my eyes off of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just got me into it.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite episodes too, actually. And what happens with The Host, I think The Host comes from the creature in The Host is born out of a mutation because of an exposure to radiation,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
And that is still, for my money, one of my favorite X-Files monsters, up there with, remember the guy who appeared to be human, but he was functionally immortal and he would eat people's livers and hide out for years. Oh man. X-Files.
Sorry. I didn't mean to get us off track there. I know that was certainly off track.
No, that's a great point, because I think it's important to understand why someone would delve into a field like this with, so much contempt that happens. For instance, if you want to become a cryptozoologist, you are in tough luck, for a lot of reasons. One of which is that there's no formal, universally accredited cryptozoology degree or course. So people claiming to be cryptozoologists are often self-appointed, mm-hmm. which, should always set off a yellow flag. I'm not going to say a red flag, but you guys know, whenever you hear somebody appoint themselves the authority on something,
it's almost orange, I would say.
It is almost orange. It's deep. It's a deep orange.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is that people who dismiss cryptozoology don't dismiss it because of the idea of hidden animals. As a matter of fact, we know that there are millions of undiscovered species in the world, and a lot of them are going to die before humans ever catalog them, right?
Yeah, we'll find the bones later.
Yes, we will find the bones later if they are large enough to have bones.
Mm-hmm.
However, the criticisms come mainly from this idea that cryptozoologists are pseudoscientists practicing epic confirmation bias, right? Like it's never acceptable that maybe the animal we're looking for, maybe the Loch Ness Monster, simply doesn't exist.
And it's really tough to get evidence of these kind of things, at least evidence that we can look at and say, this is 100%, no questions, X cryptid.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially now that video editing technology is at the point where it's at, where you can pretty much fake almost anything on video.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely difficult for someone to convince me, at least.
Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about cryptids, we're not just talking about legendary creatures like unicorns, dragons, or manticores. there's a multi-part definition that you and I found that we really like, right?
Yeah, this is kind of long, and here we go. Extant and known living species which are unrecognized as living in a particular area.
Oh, okay, so that would be an animal that we already know just in a different range.
So, yeah, out of its comfort zone.
Yeah, so like we find Persian leopards in Maine for some reason. That would make them cryptids.
Absolutely. And number two, known and living species whose form, color, and size is extraordinary for the species. Think about giant anacondas or spotted lions.
Yeah, right. Or the creatures that have island dwarfism, you know, tiny elephants, Homo floresiensis. No, I'm kidding, because that counts as a hominid.
Absolutely. And number three is a known species thought to be extinct within historical times. Like the coelacanth.
Yes, the coelacanth, which was considered extinct and prehistoric by Western experts. Of course, the people who live in the coelacanth's native range were always used to this just tremendously ugly fish. And Western explorers found it again, and it was rediscovered. It is a cryptid success story.
Yes, it is. And number four, presumably extinct species not in fossil form, known only from limited evidence. Feathers, skin, bones, or, but without a complete specimen.
Okay. All right. So that's something where we can attempt to put together clues, like trying to put together puzzle without all the pieces.
Exactly. I don't know that I have a good example for that, though.
A good example for that might be dinosaurs that were originally believed to be all the same species, but then they found different species or subspecies.
Okay. Excellent. Now, number five, we've got new species known by anecdotal evidence while no organic evidence exists.
Ah, yes. And here is where this one is important, because here's where we get the majority of what people think of when they think of cryptids, right?
Exactly.
One of my favorites is the Mongolian bloodworm.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. So the Mongolian bloodworm apparently lives in the deserts of Mongolia and possibly Central Asia, and that this creature, anecdotally speaking, is a pretty rough customer. It has the ability to either shock or poison people, and it can be 2 feet long. It's red. It lives under the sand or under the ground. And there was an expedition to attempt to find this creature some number of years ago now. That expedition, as far as I know, was unsuccessful. That's my favorite. But, of course, this category, anecdotal, no hard evidence. This category is where we find pretty much everything.
Yeah, and a lot of my favorite ones, like the Thunderbird.
What's the Thunderbird? Ones.
The Thunderbird is, it's awesome. There are a lot of Native American tales about this thing. It's a giant bird, and let's see, according to Mark A. Hall, who is an investigator, self-appointed investigator of the Thunderbird, and so the best average he has is a wingspan of 15 to 20 feet and a height of 4 to 8 feet, and there's this great tale, it's kind of just an anecdotal tale.
Sure.
Of these kids in 1977 in Lawndale, Illinois, where there's three kids playing in the backyard, two giant birds come by, and one of them tries to pick up one of the kids. And it allegedly carries him at about a height of 2 feet off the ground for 30 yards.
Wow.
But again, it's kind of just a story that people talk about, and there's not a lot of evidence there.
See, this is where I want to go on a little bit of a soapbox. All right, so Matt, we know that there are undiscovered species, right? We've admitted that. That's out in the open. That badger is out of the bag. But we haven't mentioned that species are being discovered every day at an unprecedented rate, which is true, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
And so what we have to do is attribute this to a couple of factors. One, human beings are encroaching in formerly wild habitats. Now, I'm not taking any sort of preachy stance on this. That's just a fact that is occurring. And so it's more likely than ever before that we will find things like that huge enclave of mountain gorillas, or were they lowland gorillas?
Lowland, yeah.
Yeah. So it's much more likely that we'll find these animals, and it's much less likely that they will evade detection. However, it's also important for us to note that if we're talking about finding new undiscovered animals, it's not automatically impossible. It's not automatically some sort of thing that should be dismissed. Cryptozoology, I think, gets a bit of a bad name because, again, there's not really a hierarchy in place for people to have to earn their way up or earn their expertise. Now, I'm also not saying anything bad about the people who are self-appointed or self-taught cryptozoologists, but I do think that it does a disservice to humanity as a whole if we pretend that the search for new forms of life is somehow inherently dumb. It's clearly not. There have been so many actual species discovered, like the Komodo dragon until 1912 may as well have been a unicorn. Mm-hmm. It was discovered. And it turns out that, yeah, a lot of the stuff people say about it is true. It is cannibalistic. It will eat you. It's monstrous.
Yeah.
And we know that about the coelacanth. We know that the world is full of undiscovered animals. We know that the world is full of places where human beings have not yet tread, the vast majority of those being underwater. But what I think we will find as human populations expand is that we're going to continue discovering more and more species that were formerly anecdotal, formerly legendary. Can we talk about our dinosaur episode?
Yeah, living dinosaurs. That's one of the first ones, probably the first 10 or even less that we produced.
Mm-hmm.
And that one looks at actually number 7 on
list. I forgot the list.
On this list, number 7 is a new species known only to indigenous or aboriginal peoples or discovered entirely by accident. And the first part of that is the most important, the indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to Mokle.
Mokole
Mbembe. It's essentially a dinosaur.
Yeah.
An alleged dinosaur that lives, I don't know exactly where, I'm not recalling.
In the wilds of Western Africa, apparently, in a forest that few people have ventured into. It's also alternately known as like the Ngorongo-Rongo, I think.
Yeah.
I'm mispronouncing some of this and I do apologize. But here's the idea. A quadruped, large reptile that, based on the description, looks like a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. The locals swear it's there. The locals are not impressed by it.
Yeah.
They have said that perhaps that these creatures are increasingly rare these days. When we were doing a presentation on cryptozoology, we had the good luck to meet a very interesting guy who was an animal handler.
Mm-hmm.
And he helped us out with a spot-nosed Gwenin named Gwen. It's a kind of small monkey. And we also got to talking about cryptids. And he fully believes that there could be a large undiscovered reptile in that part of Africa. Now, he was careful not to say a dinosaur exactly. But this this was an exciting thing for us to look at because that area of the world has not been exhaustively explored by scientists. It's just really expensive to venture out to that part of the world. And we see this again and again with cryptozoology attempts at expeditions, right?
Sure.
No academic source is going to fund a cryptozoological expedition. They might fund an anthropological expedition where you say, okay, a bunch of these people believe in the Yeti, so let's go to this Himalayan area and see why these people believe in the Yeti and what they say about it and what it means about their social group.
You know what I'm realizing, Ben?
What?
Zoology needs most of all a retiring older billionaire via, let's think about Indiana Jones. Yeah, someone who just goes out and explores and has billions of dollars to spend. That's what we need. We need a Batman for cryptozoology.
Yeah, we need a Branson.
Yeah.
We need a Bill Gates.
Because I think then, man, we find them all.
You think so? That they're the new Pokemon.
Yeah.
But let's see. There are other creatures that have been discovered. I guess we've done a an okay look at Cryptozoology 101, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I don't really have anything to add before we get to the best part of this story, which we teased earlier, cryptids that were actually discovered. We mentioned the coelacanth.
We did.
What's another one?
Well, how about the giant squid or the colossal squid?
Oh, yes. Now, we surely all remember the stories of sea serpents and leviathans, things that were big enough to eat a ship. And we being the human species, not you and I particularly, Matt, we as a species knew that it was possible for a squid to grow, or a cephalopod like that, to grow to an unknown size, but it had always been kind of a legend.
Okay? Yeah.
At least until it was discovered, photographed alive in 2004. And also there have been physical samples of these creatures found, going back to your earlier point about Photoshop.
Yeah.
And then let's see, there was also, what was the name of that monkey that has, no nose?
Yeah.
That's a freaky thing.
My memory does not work, Ben.
All right. Well, that's fine because we've also, let's see, we've noted the Komodo dragon. There's something that was described as the devil bird, and the devil bird turned out to be the spot-bellied eagle owl. And so, as you know, the names get a little bit less fantastical once they're actually discovered. Then there was something called the okapi, which was discovered in 1901. Now, of course, we have to also say, when these things are discovered, quote-unquote, it's a hard finger quotes there, discovered, usually the locals have known about these for years and years and years, and it's just the first person who historically was from the West who sees it gets counted as discovering.
Yeah, the discoverer.
Mm-hmm. And, giant cats also are huge. People believe that they're giant cats that roam.
How big are we talking?
Lion size, maybe.
Oh, wow.
There are quite a few reports of giant cats in the United Kingdom. And in some places, like in the Middle East, Central Asia, when there are isolated reports of these cats, it's interesting because, you know, once upon a time, that was the natural range of some large felines. But we don't at this point have solid proof of those. What we do have, however, are a couple of interesting things here. We know that, A, these creatures that were once thought legendary have been discovered, right? We know that B, zoology itself and anthropology are legitimate sciences. We know that C, it's inordinately expensive to travel to these remote hinterlands and spend months scouring for some animal that may or may not exist. It may just be like a snipe hunt, you know?
Yeah.
It's a dangerous proposition. I think it might take an eccentric billionaire. I'm Bruce Wayne, as you said.
Man, I'm telling you, we need that, man. And if you guys want to know more information about any of this stuff, we did a cryptid week not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Go back on our YouTube page and watch all of those if you want. They're pretty great. It will really get the imagination going.
Yes. And I wanted to, always want to end with us asking each other some questions. Matt, do you think that any of the cryptids that are talked about nowadays, do you think there's a case to be said for any of them actually existing?
Oh, that's a tough one for me. I want to believe.
Nice.
But I don't think that I can right now. The biggest one I would say, if I had to make a complete conjecture, I would say a large reptile that we maybe haven't really seen in a jungle where indigenous people live. I could believe that more than probably anything else.
Yeah, as a kid, I loved the idea of the Loch Ness Monster, but it never really made sense to me. There's a neat exercise that you can do, with conjecture for the living space of an animal. Like if you think about how much an animal would weigh, what kind of food it would eat, how much of that food it would need, then where that food grows, and what the distribution of that food is, then you can kind of find a range. But the idea of the Loch Ness Monster as a plesiosaur, different from a dinosaur, I promise. Mm-hmm. The idea there just didn't stack up, and it's kind of a sad day for me growing up to admit that I don't think that there's any proof that the Loch Ness Monster is anything but a hoax.
Oh, it's like Santa Claus. Not that Santa Claus doesn't exist.
Spoiler alert. My new Santa Claus in this conversation is the Mongolian bloodworm. I really want it to be real.
Really? It's so just nightmarish.
Yeah, but we could learn so many amazing things from a creature like that.
Yeah,
I don't want to have one as a pet. I want the experience of figuring out what it is and how it works.
That would be a great supervillain pet.
That is a great supervillain pet. Yeah, forget cats.
Yeah, that's what we have, stroking a Mongolian bloodworm.
All right, so that's it for us. We hope you guys have enjoyed our episode on cryptozoology. Again, this is just sort of an introduction, and we would like to return to this maybe in the future on specific cryptids. What do you think, Matt?
Absolutely. We can dig deep into some of this stuff.
Yeah, so let us know what you think. Please check us out on the internet and tell us what kind of cryptids you think are A, completely made up, B, completely legit. And where can they find us, Matt?
You can find us on Twitter. We're at Conspiracy Stuff. On Facebook, we're also Conspiracy Stuff. Or you can send us a good old-fashioned email at conspiracy@discovery.com.
And we just might read it on the air.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit testtube.com/conspiracy stuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.